Hello and welcome to this edition of the Alani T Manager Tech Talk Series. I'm Ruth Morton from Microsoft Canada, and this is my co-host Jonathan Rosenblatt.
Hello, everyone.
I almost said your name wrong.
You almost. Hey, but you got the episode right this time.
Today we're talking about development platforms, which, you know, I've been told that the only reason I'm here is to do the intro because we will mostly from the developer standpoint. But you know, I always have an opinion. So
you sure do. Good and bad.
And we have two very special guests in the studio here with us from ObjectSharp. We have Dave Lloyd and Barry Gervin. And guys, how about you do just a quick introduction and tell people who you are and what you do?
My name is Dave Lloyd. I'm a senior consultant with ObjectSharp. I'm an ALM MVP. And I spend most of my time working with development teams, helping them implement Team Foundation Server and development processes.
I'm very similar to Dave at ObjectSharp, and I'm an MVP in Application Lifecycle Management, you know, Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, and but I do a lot of stuff in other Microsoft technologies, SharePoint, WPF Web. I like to get involved in all of it.
Well, and that's actually why we have both of you here today, because today we're actually talking about making the case for the next version of the platform, right? And what we didn't want to do is kind of go out there and say, hey, yeah, new product, go out.
Look, I mean, shiny thing.
Let's shiny and new. I mean, by all means, yes, you should, absolutely. But the reality is, as managers, both infrastructure and development managers, you guys effectively have a choice to make now. And that's really, okay, how do we fit this new strategy or the new product into our strategy? What's our rollout plan? And where does it all fit in? And obviously, with anything new, there's always concerns and, you know, worries about anything like that. So before we get into that, though, why don't we talk about, by the way, remember, live show, right? So these guys are here answering your questions. Make sure you get those questions, and I'm sure this is going to be a hot topic. So they'll give you the real deal. They'll give you the real life experiences, mm-hmm. working with customers, what's working, what's not. Mm-hmm. So use it to your advantage. But before we go into all of those, you know, the business case, what are you guys finding out with the new, you know, with Visual Studio 11, Team Foundation Server 11? What's kind of like the buzz out there for the new stuff, or why are people actually getting excited?
The one that's the one piece of that that's a little older or a little more baked than the rest of it is the Team Foundation Server. Stuff and that team has been beta testing that in the cloud for some time with some insiders and now a little more public, and the thing about that is they've really improved the agile workflow.
Okay. You know, they, of course, agile is now the big buzzword in every organization, right?
Sure, but there's some specific things like the work item manager in TFS and prior versions was very much a grid, and it was up to you to write queries to make it, you know, slice and dice the data the way you wanted it. But the new version, using a new template and has a bunch of web-based tools, whether you're hosting it in the cloud or on-premise, they really give you sort of first-class experiences, whether it's managing and grooming a backlog or using a Kanban style. They have this task board where you can break down your work and you can see swim lanes.
Is that one of the ones that you can put up on the wall?
Sure, sure.
Check up on
put up on your big screen on the wall?
Yeah.
Yep.
I've always wanted to have one of those.
So it's
drag tasks between iterations and
nice.
Yep. Change your sprint planning. So really, really good experience, first class. And right in the web, you don't have to have anything installed on your machine to use that.
So it sounds like, though, then all of this kind of got simplified, right? The whole process of managing a project.
Well, one of the things that I really like about what's coming out in vNext is that, you know, I've been working with TFS since 2005. And, you know, the first version was, you know, it was a great entry into the ALM market. 2008 was a little bit better. 2010, it really kind of became mature. It was the product that I think Microsoft wanted it to be all along. And they started to bring, you know, the test tools with Test Manager and bring the testers into the software development lifecycle. It wasn't just a developer's product anymore. And now, you know, with vNext, we've got tools for BAs. We've got a plugin for PowerPoint so that they can do user interface prototyping. We've got
storyboards.
You know, we've got feedback for the product owners, a feedback tool. They've added more stuff for the testers around exploratory testing. So they've really kind of pulled it out across the whole team.
There's actually one more big one that Ruth and I were talking about last month with Islam and William about System Center 2012 and the integration there between the operations teams and the dev teams, now everybody coming together.
We always talk about getting the developers and IT folk to work together. And if the tools start, I know exactly.
Cats and dogs.
Wait, is that possible?
We're trying to get developers and testers to work together. You want to bring them in too?
The first step is to have tools that make it seamless, that break down barriers. Right. I mean, that is one component to getting people to work together,
exactly.
Collaborate together.
TFS is that central repository for everybody, right? And if everybody's tools are feeding that one central repository, then they work together, they collaborate better. Yeah.
And lab management is a great feature for sort of automating some of the stuff that IT folks or testers would have to wait on IT folks to do, where they can have a more repeatable process for provisioning test environments. And then those test environments are also available for developers to help reproduce, precise environments.
So I'm gonna flip the conversation around on you a bit, and we can say, okay, so all of this sounds great. What happens if we're in part of an organization now, we just migrated to Visual Studio 2010. Here we are saying, oh, look, you're on Visual Studio 2010, good stuff. Now there's a brand new platform. What now?
This happens with every release, though, right? I mean, we're always the evangelists and the people sort of, consultants like us that go out there and help people. We're always looking at the next release and loving the features that are in it. And then you go out to your clients and you're back in the real world. You're in, I've got clients using TFS 2005 and 2008. And I've got clients that are just looking at TFS for the first time. They haven't actually done anything with it yet. And
are they still using VSS?
I've got a lot of clients using VSS, yeah.
I remember, that's Visual Source Safe, right?
Visual Source Safe.
Yeah, I remember actually, that was one of the things when I was working for the software development companies, that was one of the server I wouldn't touch. I mean, I made sure the server was up as the IT person. I made sure that the operating system worked, and the developer dealt with Source Safe. And they dealt with permissions, they dealt with all that stuff.
And, but surely, though, your customers are seeing that there is some sort of business risk to having such older technologies, right?
There's always been a lot of risk moving from one version of Visual Studio or Team Foundation Server. One of the things that, but they've been getting really, really focusing on improving that and lowering the risk of that. So, even TFS, even the past couple versions, has been very good about letting old versions of Visual Studio connect to it,
right,
or new versions of Visual Studio connect to the old version. And they have a really good matrix documented about, basically everything that you expect to work is going to still work if you upgrade the server, but you won't take advantage of some of the new features. And sort of the other way, if you're using the new version of Visual Studio, you'll still be able to use all the old features of TFS.
Okay.
So you really have the choice whether to upgrade the server first, and then the desktops, your Visual Studio workstations, or the other way around,
or
mix and match.
Big bang.
No. I've got all kinds of customers using TFS 2010, and they're connecting to it from Visual Studio 2010, 2008, 2005, 2003 with the MSS CCI provider, with VB6, MATLAB, Power Builder.
Why are there pockets of the older software if they're running the newest version or a later version of TFS? How come they still have these old ones connecting to it?
Well, you might be. You may not want to change your server if you're in the middle of a project. First off, so
aren't you always in the middle of a project?
Yeah.
Well,
just saying.
Well, that's another migration strategy, is actually to install a new TFS server and have the old one around. New projects start up on the new one.
Okay.
Old ones continue on the old one, and when those projects are finished. But some people create TFS projects for a project, and some people create them for a product. So they may have more flexibility in moving at any point in time. But there's, you don't have to necessarily have turn one off and do an in-place upgrade. You could have both running at the same time, if that made more sense.
And now, are you finding, as you guys are going out talking to clients, are they trying Visual Studio 11 now that it can sit side by side with 2010 and there isn't this whole concept of project upgrades? And
well, there's still project upgrades. The one of the traditional problems with upgrading from Visual Studio was that Visual Studio would always indicate which version the solution file was.
Right.
So in the solution file, it would say which version of Visual Studio. So although there might have been, in Visual Studio 2010 and 2008, there was backwards compatible targeting. For instance, you could target, .NET 3.0 or 3.5 or 4.0.
Or 2.0.
So you could target older versions, But the solution file was always pinned to the version of Visual Studio.
Right.
So what that meant is everybody on your project had to migrate at the same time.
Well, and I know that that's been brought up to me several times, and that is one area of huge concern that kind of basically stopped migration.
That's changed.
Okay, good.
And that's like, to me, that's one of the best features of Visual Studio 2011, or 11, I guess it's not officially called 2011.
It doesn't officially have its name.
I hope it's
VNext, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
But so what it does is it will look at your project, and it kind of depends on the project type you have. You could have WPF, web, forms, website, web, WCF, WinForms, whatever.
Cloud.
Cloud, phone.
Yeah. It had to come up at one point.
And it will look at the projects that you have in your solution and tell you what needs to happen. And there's sort of three states.
Okay.
I would say most of them, probably 70% of the project types out there, it doesn't do anything. It just says, great, welcome to Visual Studio 11, and you can still open it up side by side with 2010 on your machine or another developer. There's another few set that say, look, we have to modify something about the solution file, but we're just going to add stuff to it, and the other folks, it will still be compatible.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Yeah. So you have to convert the project, but it's still compatible.
Convert. Got it.
And then the last one is upgrade. Where it says, look, this, because there's some significant changes, we need to upgrade this, and that will stop. And this is a very small percentage of projects. It's, you know, some esoteric, you know, like Visual Studio database projects that they've changed, and set of projects have changed. So there's a few odd ones that you can't edit in both, but, you know, probably 90% of all of them have a way of editing them in both 2010 and 2000.
And hopefully the days of having to have an older version for, you know, that's why I get customers with 2003, because .NET 1.1, you can't do in 2008. I can go back to 2, but I can't go any further back. And, you know, and then things like reporting services, there's only an editor for that in 2008. Right. So, you know, hopefully those things are going away. And
So I have a question for the person on the panel here, or the conversation here that knows nothing about development platform. If I'm a company and I'm working on my development projects, will Visual Studio 11 allow me to start using the cloud more? I mean, you know, I know you love talking about cloud, but does it help?
I see that my influence is rubbing off on you.
It's funny.
Does it help me? Like,
for the record, Ruth brought it up.
It's funny you ask, because in the beta of Visual Studio 11 right now, the way the timing came out is that the cloud tools don't actually work in it. So if you're building an Azure project today, you're going to have to keep using 2010 until their next release comes out, which I think is imminent.
Yeah.
But it's funny, you go into the project templates and you pick cloud, and it says, click here to download the tools, and it says, hey, they're coming soon. So that's one of the ones that you have to stick with 2010 right now, the cloud. You know, a lot of the new capabilities, you're really going to want to use Visual Studio 11 when that SDK is updated.
Right, because then you have your cloud stuff, you have your phone stuff, you have your Metro apps for Windows 8 now, all kind of just there in one. Yeah.
I mean, the good news is you can still have both of them. So if you're building something for Metro apps in Windows 8, you have to use VS 11. But if that's connecting to the cloud, you're going to have 2010 sitting side by side building the cloud portions of it.
And let's be clear too, right? You're really just talking about Visual Studio there. I mean, you can. I could move to TFS 2011 or 11. VNext. See, we're doing it now too. You made me do that.
Sorry.
To TFS VNext and still be using Visual Studio 2010. So, you know, if you're thinking about, you know, how do I migrate? Well, how am I going to move forward? It isn't an all or nothing thing, right? You can move parts of your development
tools. Of course,
tools.
It obviously naturally eases up making the business case to do the move over, because it's not, you know, if we're talking about funding models or stuff like that, as companies are looking at what can we afford to do this year, what can we afford to do next year, right? Now, having said that, of course, all of this stuff is technically still in beta, right? Yep. Is that an issue? Can we start now?
It's got a go live license.
Which means?
You're supported. It means you're supported.
There we go.
Right? Means you're allowed to actually ship something into production.
Yeah, you're allowed to ship something with it, and you're supported.
You're not in violation of any user agreement.
Historically, I've never had a problem
moving forward with a go live license.
Okay.
I've never come across any customers that regretted doing so.
So it's not like beta, the way beta used to be, where beta really actually meant it's really buggy, but we want you to see it.
Yeah. Like Barry said, the development teams have been using at Microsoft have been building this for. It's not like they just started it a few months ago and now we're in beta, right? I mean, I saw demos of the products over a year ago, of working. So, you know,
if you're targeting .NET 4.0 or lower. What you're producing isn't in beta.
Right.
What you're producing is built on a framework that's been around for, you know, a couple of years.
The tools you're using.
And most wouldn't separate the two, right? Because you would think the framework is hand in hand with the tools, but like you said, the one.
No, there is a separation. You can upgrade the tools and not your source code, if you like, to a different platform or a different version of .NET.
Can't have it the other way around, though.
No, if you want to target 4.5, you have to go with VS 11. Yeah.
So here's another newbie question. Explain to me what is in Team Foundation Server. I understand that Visual Studio, that's your tools, you're doing your development stuff. What are the components in Team Foundation's
server.
Thank you.
Just the big picture.
I know there's the test manager, right?
Yep.
What else do we have in there?
So test manager is a client for the QA team, and they can write test plans and test cases, do exploratory testing, publish their test results against builds back into Team Foundation server. Then inside Visual Studio, there's a tool called Team Explorer that the developer gets, or anybody. I have a lot of teams who actually install Team Explorer as their main client for TFS, and whether they're a developer or not. That's just, you know, they like the Windows client and it works well. And the new one that's coming in vNext is a huge jump from the last one. In, you know, previous versions of TFS, the Team Explorer was really just a tree view, view into, or tree view control, that was sort of a view into TFS. But now it's a live active. You can request feedbacks, you can request code reviews, you can, you know, it's just it's really brings to the person using it,
it's like more
their
about
work.
Productivity than it
it's
is
a
about
very
the
huge
tool,
productivity gain tool. Right? Yeah.
Yeah, we were talking about Visual Source Safe earlier. Yeah. You remembered that from a previous life, but you know, the big thing you get with TFS that when people come to it out of the box is source control. That's your source control engine, and it's a very powerful source control engine and built on SQL Server. You don't have to worry about, you know, Visual Source Safe. A lot of people will experience corruption because it's a file share type of service. There is
Not that that's ever happened, but
getting to larger versions, and although they did come up with a patch to make an HTTP service on top of it, in general, the way most people deploy it, it's very chatty. So if you're trying to use it over any kind of WAN, it's very slow.
Challenge.
Now, the big thing on top of this, so source control is great. It's good to have a good source control engine with, you know, first-class branching and merging. But then sort of the other two areas that TFS adds are automated builds. So it has a build server.
Okay. The best part of TFS right there.
And so that's constantly doing a continuous integration, perhaps, or doing your release builds or QA builds for you.
Gated check-ins. Release build, right? So I'm gonna put up a flag there for you. Does that mean that we automate deploying into live production environment?
I don't know about live production, but I've done a lot of implementations where we utilize the build system to do, and MS Deploy, to do automatic deployments into test.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We're not
using and abusing, if you will, to kind of just throw away all of our IT processes.
I do have one client that goes right from the build system straight into production. I won't mention them, and if they're watching,
this is a whole area referred to as continuous deployment.
Right.
Okay.
And it's not for everybody.
Okay.
It's not for the banks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you are a SaaS provider, no one likes the banks. They have all my money though. But if you're if you're a service provider, you've got a SaaS offering, and the idea of doing a release once a year or every 6 months or something is not very innovative and rapid. You know, like Facebook, they deploy stuff all the time, and
whether we like it or not,
and. You look at models like Salesforce, where they're doing a quarterly release. But continuous development is about developers checking in. There's some quality bars that need to be passed. We have the notion of being able to do automated testing, and then and of course your build. But then, wouldn't it be nice if TFS actually deployed it for me as well?
Yeah.
Maybe not into production, but maybe into a staging environment or testing environment. And I think that's probably where that team is going. It's definitely an area that people are very interested in.
So let's go back to talking about migration, business cases, stuff like that. I know I mentioned a couple of friction points that I know of. Whole concept of backwards compatibility, having the two side by side, talked about licensing and potential issues with beta and go live. What are you guys hearing, or what are your customers telling you about some of their kind of concerns in when they're prepping their business cases, pros, cons?
Well, I'll throw it in. I get a lot of customers that are, because they'll have had previous versions of TFS, and they may have customized the process template. So, okay. That's kind of I say customize the process template like everybody knows what I'm talking about. Maybe they don't. But TFS has a piece that kind of sits on top of it that lets you make TFS, you can define the process. So you can say, I want to have product backlog items and tasks and test cases and bugs. And those are the only artifacts that I want to work with. Or I might have, a more waterfallish kind where I've got, requirements and change requests. So I can define the way TFS works and how I use it. And, people will customize it to suit their process. And then they get a little nervous when the new version comes out, because in the new version of vNext, one of the things that's going to ship with it is a third process template. We previously had Agile, CMMI, and now we're getting a Scrum 2.0 is going to ship with it right out of the box. And that never happened before. So, development teams are always keen. I want to use Scrum, or I want to use this. But, meanwhile, they've got an older process template, and it's not always just a cut and dried, jump into the new server. Do you want to bring your old stuff with you? Do you want to take advantage of some of the new features in the process template it's something to think about.
So one of the things the product team has done is, there's lots of new features in the the Scrum board or the task board or the product backlog, the sprint planning, and those features, those user experiences require some things to be added to the process template.
Okay.
So they have a new process template that includes those extra, fields for storing things like the order of things and how it forecasts things, a bunch of little things. But what they've done is they've created scripts that you can run against your process template that will add. So if you've taken the MSF Agile one and you've made some changes, you don't want to just blow that away and lose all your data have to worry about migrating your data into the new process template.
Which, of course, would have required additional budget in order to get the entire project off the ground.
So they've developed some scripts that are going to be part of the product that you can download them now, and you can run them on your process template, and it will add the fields that are necessary to make those screens light up and work.
So that sounds to me like like a pro on the business case.
Right. And the other thing that they've done is there's other features that they've added to the process template that aren't necessary for those screens, but that's a second set of scripts. So if you want to take advantage of those, and I believe they're going to ship the source code for those scripts. So if you want to cherry pick what you want to
And I really wish they had done that with 2010.
Oh yeah, that would have been
because they added test cases in 2010, and everybody, I want to use test cases, and people would have their old template and they'd start up test manager and it would go, you don't have test cases, you can't use test manager.
Yeah. Well, and hence the concern so, every time you migrate to a new platform where these things kind of pop up, and it just increases that stress level potentially unnecessarily.
And all the tools are there to get you up to the new process. It's like, Barry says, if they give me scripts, then I know what to do.
Though, right? That hasn't really been the case in the past.
The tools were there to do it. Has been there for me to just add to my template when I wanted to, but I'd have to know how to do it.
Okay. So in terms of the pros, anyway, I'm seeing a lot of project managers who really, really love the Agile tooling that's in TFS.
Now they actually have access into it.
Right. Yeah. Well, there was a web-based interface before, but it was meant for developers.
Exactly. Right. So that's why I kind of almost put it to the side and said,
there's still a plugin for Project, and there's still a plugin for Excel. But in terms of dragging and dropping between boards, I know a number of project managers who just have fallen in love with that, and they won't start a project now without that. Even if it's not a project that's being developed on Visual Studio, I still see them using that just to manage their Scrum or their Agile process.
I've got at least three or four customers who built their own back in 2008 and 2010. That's how badly it was needed. So it's great that Microsoft's put that into the product.
So again, pro. What about a con? Just from a real perspective.
There's nothing on NoCon.
I would love to say that, but I'm sure that that's not the case.
Well, I'm using the hosted TFS right now. I've been testing that, and I have a few projects that are running inside of that. And it's funny because a few days last month I went in and stuff was missing. Stuff was moved around, and I was like, did they do an update? And I actually found out at the MVP summit that they said, oh yeah, all the MVP accounts have this high priority flag. We're deploying stuff to you guys every 2 weeks.
Nice. Okay.
So I'm surprised that it was every 2 weeks because I was using it. I only noticed it during 1 week where stuff had moved around. So they're constantly refining it. If you are faint of heart, you won't like that if you're using the hosted one.
Okay. But that's really like a beta concern. Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
But it's still a concern with TFS because they're shipping the features in the cloud version first, and then they're pushing them into the on-premise version.
Okay.
So the on-premise beta, you download the bits and it's there and it's not changing, but there's still innovation going on, and I believe there's still going to be innovation going on in the cloud version even after they ship this thing.
Which puts on a whole interesting new way of looking at this, especially if you're looking at, again, business case migration, so on and so forth. Right. Now you have an additional decision to make. Do I go with TFS on premises or do I go TFS in the cloud?
I think the biggest thing will be how the team communicates with the folks on the cloud. Like, here's the upcoming stuff that's coming down. Like, giving you your heads up before it happens.
The Microsoft folks, you mean?
The Microsoft folks, yeah. So I wonder if that'll be a deciding factor when people are.
Are you finding for your customers that that's an issue, it's an area of concern? The fact that there's going to be constant updates.
The big concern. I think most customers still feel comfortable with the on-premise version, and for those customers, installing a beta server with the beta database and a beta database structure, starting to put all your project data in there. What's the risk of me being able to upgrade that when the new one comes out? Because, you know, I did see in 2010, I did see a lot of people still running the betas of 2010 well after, because there was a migration and update process, and they were just afraid to do it. And so, you know, some people would rather wait until it's GA and it's, you know, final and it's locked down and it's not going to change. So there could be changes. So there is a concern about that, like any beta. But it's a server product, so you're worried about your project data and what's going to happen.
But in this case, too, with a Go Live license, you still have that support should there be a problem.
Sure, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and there is assurances that there'll be a migration process to update your server if there's database changes. But
well, there's always concern with TFS because it's kind of a dual admin thing, right? It's not like, you know, Windows Server where, you know, the IT pro people decide it's time to upgrade from 2003 to 2008 and they let you know what's going to happen and then they do it. You know, TFS, there's the admin side of TFS for the server, and then there's the admin side for projects. And, you know, the two really have to work together to when you're going to upgrade a server, and there's a lot to it. So I think there's always a little bit more planning that goes on upgrading a TFS server than other types of servers.
So I think then the lesson there is that when you're planning, to make sure to bring in your IT pro folks and your network folks and all those guys right from the beginning and not just kind of consider it, well, you know, it's a dev platform, so we'll kind of handle it on our own.
Right, yep. You know, I would love to
see how
explore.
I'm taking care.
I would love to actually explore that a little more, but we have run out of time. So
I can't believe it. What about questions? Do we have questions?
I see that Chris has been typing on the instant messenger. So. Well,
but I mean, the good news is that these guys are going to hang out in the Align IT LinkedIn group anyway. The Canadian Developer Connection LinkedIn group as well. So if you don't think of anything right now, that's perfectly fine. They're there. Ask them questions.
Yep.
More than happy to answer them. Last question for you guys before we go off is, talking about all these features, talking about beta, great. I'm assuming your recommendation, tell me if it's otherwise, is just to go try it out. Otherwise, you won't know what your business casing.
I think it requires a little more investigation on your behalf, and I think a great way to do that is to come to an event that Dave and I are putting on May 1st.
Small plug.
May 1st, yeah.
Wasn't that a nice segue?
That was good.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. That is Object Sharp at the Movies. Is that what it's called?
Object Sharp at the movies. We do one every year.
For folks in Toronto?
In the Toronto area. Although if you're from Calgary, you can fly in.
But actually, interestingly enough that you mentioned that, we are actually recording at the event, and all those sessions are going to be airing live on Tech Days TV in May and June, I believe. But stay tuned to the blog for that, and we'll give you more information on that.
And you can download the beta bits from Microsoft.ca/evalcenter.
Yes.
So if you go there and download the bits and take a look at it. There's also a bunch of prices and discounts, I understand.
Yeah, that's actually one big thing before we do go off, is that now is there is no better time to go get this stuff because pricing is going to change.
Yeah.
So go and get the stuff now, and so you can take advantage of current prices, which will then roll into the next version. Yeah. So definitely check that out.
And if you can't wait for the recording of the May 1st event, May 1st event, we can take a look at the Tech Days online, techdays.ca, and look at Adam Gallant's session,
Dev 380.
You download that session, and it's all about what's new in the Visual Studio 11 beta.
And actually it doesn't touch Team Foundation Server, but we'll get to that one for sure.
All right. And I think that's it.
Yeah, thanks,
thank you
guys.
Very much, guys.
Thanks for having us.
All right.
Awesome, fun. Real conversation. That's why we have people like you guys on the show.
Yeah.
Until then, where's the time cop? What are we?
We're
always time cop.
That's why I was. Did you not know?
Anyway,
I was being subtle this time.
It's fine. See you next month.
All right. Take care. Bye, everyone.